John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Fourth and final hour, Darren Donica, Jace here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's head over to West End like we do every Tuesday at this time. Let's bring in Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason. He's on the line with us. Coach, how you doing?
Doing well. How about you, gentlemen?
Well, they say milk does the body good. Has the time off done you guys some good?
It's given us a chance to get guys back, and that's always good. So I'd say milk does do everybody good.
I want to ask you this, and I said I was going to because we had a discussion in the last hour and wanted to pick your brain on it. You're a defensive-minded coach. And we were just kind of talking about the pass rush or lack of for the Titans and how do you get that better. And just philosophy-wise, where do you stand on, is it from the outside – in or from the inside out that you think can have the most efficient pass rush or getting to the quarterback? How would you answer that?
Well, you know, edge players are, you know, at a premium. I mean, those guys, you know, get paid to, you know, generally rush the passer. I mean, they can play the run, but they get paid to rush the passer. You know, when you talk about interior pass rush, to be able to get it from a guy who can play the run, you know, is exceptional. And you like to think that just because of being in the NFL that there's a lot of guys that can do it, but it's still a skill and an art to be able to transition from run to pass. But, you know, it also depends on what you're seeing up front. Are you seeing, in play action, in max pro, or is it, you know, straight drop back? If you get straight drop back, most NFL defensive lines are going to get a pass rush because the ends make it hard and those guys inside the job of gaming is stunning. When you start to talk about what's happening, with play action, you know, sometimes the secondary's got a lot of time for the rush to get home. Pass rush and coverage work together.
Interesting. You've had time to look at your next opponent and watch them. Certainly, the offenses seem to be way ahead of the defenses, and that probably makes a guy like you cringe. But everybody's had their struggles, you know, playing really good defense. I mean, scoring is at a premium, and Ole Miss is going to be no different. So why do you think – I know we've touched on this a little bit with you in the past weeks, but why do you think right now still it doesn't seem like defenses have been able to catch up to offenses?
Well, it's you know, offenses have done a really good job of you know, really, you know, making it math and getting matchups and whether they're getting in bunch sets or whether they're doing a good job with receiver motions, whether it's across the ball or crossing back. What you're seeing is you know, making you do quick math and then being able to, you know, I mean, take advantage of the matchups, you know, as they unfold. You know, offenses are in tune with what they're doing, and defenses are having to, work through picks and doing quick math in order to get, you know, bodies on bodies, eyes in the right place, and finding guys. And what you're seeing is a lot of times, guys looking at it and saying, well, I thought so-and-so had this person. And, you know, when you do that, you know, defensively, and believe me, I've seen it happen to us. It's happened to a lot of defenses like this year. The preparation during this offseason was good, but it definitely favored the offense because, you know, offensively, it's about just understanding your job and doing your job. And defensively, it's about reacting and being able to, you know, get guys in the right spots and making sure, maybe, that you can play top down, tackle the football. Tackling wasn't at a premium or in terms of the off season and what you were able to do. And so with that, you're seeing defenses give up explosive plays, and the tackling hasn't been quite what people are used to seeing. But, you know, kudos to the offense. I think football and the rules right now favor the offense. And with that being said, you know, defenses are just a little slower right now, you know, getting to the spots and being able to do what they do.
Have you ever heard, speaking of offense, have you ever heard of guys by the name of A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf? You ever heard of those guys?
Yeah, I remember those guys.
I bet you're probably glad they're not at Ole Miss anymore, but I guess that's what I wanted to ask you, because A.J. is obviously here in Nashville playing for the Titans, and what right. D.K. Metcalf did, he has garnered a lot of attention with a viral video. If you weren't watching the game, you've seen it by now, but I was watching it. And watching him run down a safety 90 yards and getting him before he gets in the end zone after an interception, which looked like a pick six. When you went up against those two guys, I mean, just – I think it's another thing we've talked to you in the past about over the years. Did you think they could be this special at the next level?
Yes. Yes. I mean, you see it in this conference – every weekend. You could talk about Deebo Samuel. You could talk about Metcalf. You could talk about A.J. Brown. You could talk about, you know, Alvin Kamara. I mean, these are the guys that you see, you know, week in, week out in this conference. And that's why, you know, the talent level in this conference is probably unlike any other from top to bottom. You know, you get guys, going against guys Monday through Friday, just challenging one another, playing big-time football on Saturday, and you see a lot of these guys getting paid on Sunday, you know, to do the exact same thing. So the SEC is an unbelievable conference that way, but I'm not surprised by, DJ Metcalf's success. I'm not surprised by A.J. Brown's success.
Talking to Derek Mason, head football coach for Vanderbilt, as they've got the big game coming up against Ole Miss. And, Coach, you referenced it at the beginning. You've been just trying to gather the bodies back so you can start putting your team back together and practicing. And I know you detailed some of this earlier at your press conference, but if you can, for our audience, just what has this been like, this time off, just trying to get guys back so that you can start progressing again?
Yeah, you know, we had more defensive guys down than we did, you know, offensive guys. And so, you know, what we were able to do was get some of our young defensive guys, a lot of work, but really focused on offensively, you know, making sure that we can take advantage of, you know, showing up protections. Should we be giving our quarterback different platforms to throw from? Working on the timing and spacing of what we do pass game, and, you know, like, how can we create, some more explosive runs and get great play action off the run game. So that's what we did, during our time off. It was, you know, truly spent on the fundamentals of the game, self-scouting ourselves and making sure that we sort of tried to shore up, you know, like, those areas that we knew and that we were going to need to improve in as we embarked on the second, you know, part of this season for us. And then when you talk about, like, getting guys, I think what people don't understand, you know, in this, whether we talk about, you know, COVID or injuries, I mean, everybody heals differently. And in COVID, people's bodies are going to react differently. You look at the idea of, yeah, I mean, everybody thinks, okay, 10-day isolation, well, then it's over. Well, I mean, it's not over. I mean, there's PCR testing, there's EKG, there's MRI testing on the heart to make sure that they are, okay. And then from there, you have to acclimate these guys back to practice, and that's a 4 or 5 day period in terms of what it looks like. And then, you know, quarantine is pretty much the same way. I mean, you don't have all the testing on the backside of quarantine, but what you do have is the idea of getting guys, you know, back for a 2-day acclimation period. And then on the other side of that, making sure with the GPS technology, man, that you're getting them, you know, good football measurements before you actually let them go and get ready to play on Saturday. So that's what it's looked like for us. That's where we've been. And right now, we're well on our way to contest with Ole Miss on Saturday.
As your players go through this, I'm sure, you know, you're trying to keep them up with class. You're trying to keep them mentally sharp. So have you been able to – what process have you put in when they're not available to you to practice with the team so they can stay involved mentally and maybe get through those mental reps of preparation so when they come back, they're ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, you know, for these guys, that's where technology is so different than it was 20 years ago. The ability, you know, and to be able to, you know, have your players, even though they may be in quarantine or isolation and or, you know, injured, you've got access to Zoom and being able to have your guys in meetings. They may not be able to be in-person meetings, but the availability to, you know, look at practice, look at the corrections, look at the game plans, you know, still stay engaged, you know, as they're still going to school, it is important because, you know, being away can seem isolating, but what we've been able to do is just continue to, you know, I mean, keep the process at least mentally, you know, been moving in the right direction. And again, technology's played a big part of that.
I know the depth chart comes out, but you still have, you know, some pending tests. And as you just went through, there's a list of things, a checklist that has to be cleared. Do you feel like you might get a couple of more guys back? I know a lot of people are wondering about Marlowe, the running back, a guy that could really help you if he's there. But is it possible that as we sit here today, your depth chart could look different on Saturday?
Absolutely. I mean, I say it every day. You know, I mean, the depth chart, you know, I mean, pretty much changes every day. But as it's pretty much changed from Thursday to where we sit today. There's a possibility of guys being able to get back to this game. Man, we had some guys, you know, man, out there today, and that were in shells, man, but they were limited just in terms of the number of snaps they were able to take. And so with that, barring any, you know, unforeseen, you know, issues over the next, you know, 48 to 72 hours, we will get, you know, a couple more guys back. And, you know, but that only strengthens this football team's ability to compete on Saturday.
Derek Mason, the head coach of Vanderbilt, is here with us on Darren Donick and Chase. And you talked about Ole Miss's offense earlier and how you got to slow them down. But I am curious, because you've seen Lane Kiffin over the years, whether when it was he was the head coach at USC and you were the DC at Stanford or you know, obviously his time as the OC at Alabama, how much have you seen him evolve, not only as a head coach, but with his offenses over the last few years?
It's truly evolved. I mean, Lane has always been, you know, one of the top offensive minds around. I mean, when he was at SC, man, he was very innovative in terms of what he was doing. I mean, he was playing with, you know, tight ends. He was playing with, you know, wide outs. He used, you know, maybe two speed backs in the backfield. I mean, he always utilized motion. But what you've seen, whether, you know, it was at Alabama and then his time at FAU, the pace upon which, you know, he comes at you now looks different. And I think, you know, having spent time, you know, with Kendall Briles at FAU, I mean, really, really sort of changed his idea about, you know, tempo and how to utilize tempo, like, to his advantage. I think now what you see, you know, from Lane is still a nuanced run game. They still have a nuanced run game, and they can run the football. A lot of times Lane doesn't like to stick to it, but, I mean, he can run the football. The thing that, you know, I mean, they do now is that they spread you, you know, sideline to sideline. I mean, when you look at their sets, they utilize, you know, most of the 53 and a third horizontally as they're out in the field. And what that does, it opens windows and creates, you know, one-on-ones and matchup, you know, issues for you, you know, as they look to throw and run the ball. So, you know, with that being said, he's got two really good quarterbacks, and Plumlee and Carroll, and those guys can come at you in different ways. And so with that, you've got to look at, you know, scheme design, your players, put your players in the best possible position and have some things to attack what they do.
I'm curious of your thoughts on this. Lane obviously has a personality, and he's very active on Twitter, and we see it, you know, in his interviews. And I think every coach, especially nowadays with technology, you do see more of the personalities. We've seen it from you talking about, you know, getting on the turntables, and we've had those conversations on the show. But how important is it for the coach to kind of show that different side and not just the X's and O's?
Well, I think it's about personality. I think it's about relationships. I think it's about, you know, young people today, you know, truly looking at you and seeing whether or not they can see themselves playing for you, or do, or are there some common interest, or you know, who are you as a person, you know, all the way around. I mean, is it staunch? Is it you know, crisp all the time? Is there a fun side to you? I mean, do you have hobbies? You know, I mean, these things matter to young people nowadays. But make no mistake, we're still football coaches. And we still coach football, and we want good football players. And, you know, for them, they're looking for certain things, but we're looking for certain things too. And those, you know, for student-athletes, you know, personality and trust and relationships are non-negotiable. And for us as coaches, we want to make sure that we're getting competitive players, men that want to make sure, men, that they can, you know, raise their game and actually be challenged, mentored, and stressed through the process so they can become – not only the players that they want to be, but the men they want to be.
He is Coach Derek Mason at Vanderbilt. Coach, we appreciate the time, and good luck this week against Ole Miss.
Appreciate you, gentlemen. Take care. Let's anchor down.
Anchor down indeed. Derek Mason joins us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Stick around. Mitch after Mason. Mitch Light of The Athletic. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tuesday following Derek Mason, it's Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Vanderbilt's finally going to get back on the playing field, as we just talked about with Coach, and they're facing an Ole Miss team that their head coach, Lane Kiffin, was not happy with the call in their game against Auburn, was not happy in his press conference, not happy with the league and their explanation, and he's been fined. What did you make – let's just start there. What did you make of how that played out in the Ole Miss-Auburn game?
Well, first of all, it's kind of what we all expect. You know, Lane Kiffin, for a coach who's 1-4, is stealing all of the oxygen in a league with some pretty high-profile head coaches. So, you know, based on what he's done offensively and some of the exciting games and then complaining about the officials, yeah, I think he had a good point. There seemed to be no reason for – them not to review the play. And I like instant replay in college. I know a lot of people don't. I like to see the calls get made correctly. And I get frustrated. It seems like there's too many reviews and they last too long. But then you've got a case like that where it seems like they didn't review it and they should have. Very costly play. And it just happened to be that it was Auburn 2 weeks in a row. So I understand his frustration and then all the follow-up on Twitter, which is great. So he's he has definitely added some fun to the league this year.
No doubt. And Mike Leach certainly came out of the gates adding some fun to the league. But, boy, Mississippi State, it's gone the wrong direction for them. I bring that up because these are the next two opponents for Vanderbilt, the Mississippi schools. And the Bulldogs, it looks like from all the reports today, they may be without their star running back for the rest of the year or forever at Mississippi State, because it sounds like all the reports out of Starkville are he's about to start focusing on his NFL draft status.
Yeah, as speaking of stealing all the oxygen, we spent you know, probably 75% of the post week one you know, time on talk shows writing about in the SEC was Mississippi State, and they are, and no one's talking Mississippi State the last couple of weeks. They're just they've been a non-factor. They haven't played well, and you know, they haven't won games. And then now they're back in the news for the wrong reasons. And Kylan Hill, who was so pro-Mike Leach after that first game, you know, they beat LSU and saying his offense is perfect for me. And, you know, I guess it was an injury he was out with. It's not really 100% known. But now it looks like he won't be back. And he was one of the most dynamic players in the league. I mean, I think Najee Harris has proven to be the best running back in the league this year. But he was right there with him and a huge loss for that team that right now is looking for answers offensively, which we never thought we would have said after week one.
Isn't this just what this college football season is like, just trying to figure these teams out? I mean, prime example is Kentucky's last two wins, dominating fashion over Mississippi State in Knoxville, where they haven't won since 84, and then they go to Missouri and just lay a big old egg, and Missouri wins. I mean, that's just – right now, not just life in the SEC, it's just life in college football in 2020, isn't it?
Yeah, Kentucky is one of the more confounding teams. They control the line of scrimmage. They dominate Tennessee, and they go play a Missouri team that won the week before but got lit up defensively, at least by LSU, and Kentucky can't do anything. 36 offensive plays for Kentucky, 92 for Missouri. In the last 20 years, there's only been 12 teams that have had 36 or fewer plays in a game, and none in the SEC. So Kentucky's the first SEC team in at least 20 years to have that fewer plays, and they just couldn't do anything on offense. They've tried Gatewood at quarterback. He didn't do anything. Kentucky possessed the ball for only 16 minutes and 50 seconds. I can't remember a number that low. And that's, again, after they controlled the line of scrimmage and controlled the ball against Tennessee. So aside from the personnel issues, trying to figure out who is on which team, you have stuff like this, like Mississippi State, that we just talked about, so great offensively, then nothing. Kentucky looks so great for a couple of weeks, and then they just can't do anything against Missouri. So you're right, Darren. We might say this every year, but it just seems like this year it's harder to figure things out week to week.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. We're talking college football. Mitch, there was so much to get into from the Big Ten's first week. It was certainly fun to have them back. But what was your biggest takeaway? What did you learn more than anything else about anybody in the Big Ten?
I don't want to say I learned that much about Ohio State, because they were probably as expected. They were really, really good. Watched pretty much every snap of that game. And they might not be as dynamic at running back as they have been in the past, or they don't have that, surefire first-round pick as a pass rusher, but they're really, really good all over the place. Don't want to get, overreact too much to Michigan, but they look very good offensively. Milton, the quarterback, looked good, and they've got decent skill. They have good stable of running backs. That was a nice win. I don't want to overreact to Penn State, although they did lose another running back today. It looks like Noah Kane might be out for the year, so they're really thin there. They kind of controlled that game. Statistically, Indiana did nothing until that last drive when they needed to, but what a fantastic ending there. So I thought it was an eventful week in the Big Ten. Very quietly, Northwestern, which was among the worst offensive teams that we've seen out of major college football last year, in the last couple of years. Coincidentally enough, it's a former Indiana quarterback, Peyton Ramsey, who transferred. They had a big win over Maryland, who might be awful this year. Iowa goes on the road, loses to Purdue team without Rondell Moore and without Jeff Brohm. So it was a fun week in the Big Ten. There was a lot of eventful happenings.
It happened in the pros as well, but the whole situational game of when do you not want to score, even when the other team is trying to let you score, I'll just never forget the look on the Penn State running back's face as he looked back to the sideline, because he knew as he was walking in there, why is nobody chasing me? Wait a minute. What did I just do? And he was in the doghouse. Franklin did the turnaround and walk away, and he saw all he needed to see.
Yeah, and, people blame James Franklin for that, and Franklin doesn't want to show the kid up too much, but they clearly talked about it. And I was talking to a friend of mine, it's like, that situation always comes up, and it never comes back to bite a team. Like, oh, they shouldn't have scored there. And then it happened in the pros, like you said, the next day with the Falcons, back-to-back days. Real quick aside, I don't gamble, but about 5 years ago, I like to pick games against the spread, did it all the time in Athlon. I had a friend going out to Vegas, and I think I put $100 on Stanford back when they were really good, I think, to cover at Arizona State. Exactly. And I was watching the game like at 1 in the morning on, ESPN, late Pac-12 after dark. Same situation there. Stanford needs to go in and cover. Stanford running back, no one within 20 yards, takes a knee at the 1, and they don't cover, and I lose my $100 there. So that was the first thing I thought of, is when I watched the Penn State running back go in there. But, you felt bad for the kid because it was obviously a mistake, and then it came back to haunt them in a big way.
I know Chase will probably have another Tennessee question or two for you, so I want to ask about Arkansas and just where you think they've come in terms of closing the gap between themselves and a team like Tennessee, because Tennessee is now in a situation. They've got the bye week, but their next game will be against Arkansas, and, man, it will really get – very noisy if they're not able to pull that game off.
Yeah, it's. I was listening to one of the Athletic podcasts, the Football and Grits one that I do on Thursdays, and David Ubben was on our wrap-up show on Monday, and he called it maybe the biggest, most biggest, the I don't know how to say this, not the biggest game in the Jeremy Pruitt era, but the most, the game they cannot afford to lose the most. They just, winning that game doesn't necessarily do much for you. Losing that game really, really hurts Jeremy Pruitt. Tennessee's still a better team. Arkansas is limited offensively. I think what we're seeing is they're among the best coached defensive teams. You know, Barry Odom, I first heard of Barry Odom back when he was defensive coordinator at Memphis, doing a great job there. And then he did a great job at Missouri. It didn't work out as a head coach, and that was a great hire Sam Pittman made bringing him on board. So, and I've made this point many times, not taking anything away from that new staff there, but if you look at the recruiting rankings, and I know not everything's about recruiting and there's attrition, Arkansas has been a top 25 recruiter for the past 5-6 years. There is talent in that program. It was kind of inexplicable how bad they got the last couple of years, but Pittman's pushing all the right buttons, but he's got some good talent. And that is before the season, obviously for Tennessee, you chalk that one up as a win, and that is far from the case right now.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So obviously the conversation about Tennessee has been, okay, what's going on with the program? Are they closing the gap? Are they truly getting better? But everybody points to Jeremy Pruitt, and rightfully so, he is the head coach. How would you evaluate Jim Chaney, though, as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, not great. I mean, a lot was made of that hire, and it depended on who you listened to. For Tennessee fans, was a great coup. Stolen from Georgia. Georgia fans and Georgia people were like, well, we kind of let him go. No, no love lost. They weren't shedding any tears. I think he's, who am I to sit here and say Jim Chaney's not a good play caller? Right? It's a very complex thing. But he seems to have thrived at a place like Georgia when he had better players. And, he had an unbelievable offensive line, a stable of running backs, good quarterbacks, not always great quarterbacks. And you can't, when you're, Tennessee has good talent, they don't have Georgia talent, you need to be a little more creative. You can't just do the things you did when you had the better personnel. So that would be my critique of them, is maybe lack of creativity and just trying to line up and kind of smash mouth football there when, they've got good running backs, and on paper their offensive line is really good. It's looked great at times there. So I don't think you can look at this season right now, Chase, and say he's done a great job.
How much, though, do you put on Jeremy Pruitt not letting him do his job fully? Because I think we've seen some instances where Jeremy Pruitt, he likes to have his hands on everything. He fired the defensive line coach because he didn't like the philosophy, and now he's coaching the defensive line. And there are, it does appear that he's difficult to work for. So how much do you think that factors in?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to factor in some. I think probably Jim Chaney ran into that at Georgia, too, when you work for a defensive coach. And there were some people who said that about Andy Ludwig early in his tenure at Vanderbilt, that Derek Mason was the one who was holding him back. And I thought it was the lack of talent that held him back. And then as Kyle Shurmur got older and better and the talent around him increased, that you saw that offense really take off the last couple of years. So I think there's always something to that, because it is the head coach, but it's up to a guy like Pruitt to really let his offensive coordinator run that offense, be the head coach of the offense, because I'd imagine it's difficult for a guy like Jim Chaney or any of these high-profile coordinators to do their job if they've got the head coach kind of listening in too much. And one thing I'll say about Pruitt is sometimes you appreciate his honesty. It was after the Kentucky game when, as fans and media, we can watch. I think it was the first pick six where they threw that out to the wide side of the field is one of those where you throw it 40 yards to gain 7, and that was picked. And he said, basically, why are we running that play? And he said that out loud, after the fact. I don't know if it was right after the game or in the press conference later in the week, kind of questioning the play call and the play design there. So I thought that was very interesting, but I'm sure Jim Chaney didn't love hearing that.
So I'm going to read you a quote. This is non-Tennessee related. I'm going to read you a quote from a prominent college football player, and I don't know if these guys have heard this either. Quote, my mindset has been that I'm going to move on. But who knows? There's a lot that could happen. That is from Trevor Lawrence. And it's an article on ESPN hinting that maybe he stays for his senior season. I don't buy it. I think it's baloney. I think he realizes he's going to the Jets and is having second thoughts. Understandable. But what do you think of that?
I agree with you. I don't, you know, I can't imagine a scenario where he comes back. And unless it's just something where he doesn't want to play, absolutely doesn't want to play for the Jets. And, but, you know, Justin Fields is having one game, looks great. There's nothing to be, nothing guaranteed that says that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one pick. You know what I compare?
And maybe the Jets could win a couple games. If it's about the Jets.
No, Willie, that's crazy talk. That's not going to happen.
Come on now.
As a native, you know, I can make fun of the Jets. But, you know, guys, and Willie will appreciate this, this sounds a lot like some of the elite pitchers that Vanderbilt has had who you know they're going to leave after their junior year, but they always say, well, you know what, I'll have to see what happens, see what goes in the draft, and then it's like, you know they're gone. They know they're gone, but they say stuff like that. So, I'd be shocked if he came back.
That's what I thought you would say, but just wanted to throw that out there. At first,
because I hadn't seen that quote, you scared me. I thought it was like something like he's saying, "Well, you know what? I thought he was going to like leave mid-season." That's what I thought you were talking about. But that seems to be
because
Trevor Lawrence as anything.
Because I think we all are wondering if in the circumstances here, if you will see some players who start looking ahead to the draft and instead of just not playing the bowl game. Don't play the last three games or something like that. I do wonder that.
Well, Kylin Hill, we don't know the circumstances at Mississippi State, but, you know, that's what this kind of smells like. You know, he got hurt a little bit, banged up, missed some games, and just teams not doing as well. So I'm moving on there. And I forgot where I saw this quote, and who knows what NFL teams really – sometimes we overestimate how much they care about character and stuff like that. But the way NFL teams look, there's one thing about missing a bowl game, but there's another thing about bailing on your team, even in these times, like three or four games into the season. If you commit to the season and then leave, maybe that affects the way an NFL team looks at a guy. There was a specific quote, I don't know, it was one of the draft guys, and I forgot which player it was about, but that one kind of was interesting to me.
I will say this, if ever there were a guy that, you know, would just buck the trend and say, I love my time here so much. And if they come up short, don't win the national championship. I mean, he would fit that mold of just, he loves Clemson. He loves his teammates. He wants to give it one more shot, even though everybody would be telling him, you're stupid, don't do it.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, when you asked me the question initially, you know, I still maintain that he'll won't be back, but I do agree that of all the guys that have come through, if you were going to say, you know, pick one or rank the guys that would buck that trend and come back for fourth year, it would be him. And, you know, it's clearly not the same thing because Trevor Lawrence is going to be the first or second pick in the draft. But, you know, Najee Harris is a guy that came back at Alabama, even though he was a draft eligible junior. He's having a great senior year, probably helped himself out. But again, there's probably just way too much risk involved for Trevor Lawrence.
Mitch, good stuff as always. We'll do it again after Coach Mason next week.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us every Tuesday. We call it Mitch After Mason around 1:15 or so. We'll have more. We'll wrap up the show. But first, Darren, tell us more about DraftKings.
I will. Legal sports betting is coming to Tennessee really, 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 really soon. Just around the corner. The best way to get in the action is with DraftKings. DraftKings is bringing their experience as a leader in daily fantasy sports to the sports betting world. They've created America's top-rated sportsbook app, DraftKings Sportsbook, to celebrate this momentous event. DraftKings is giving everyone who registers now a $50 free bet to use once. DraftKings Sportsbook, and when it becomes fully operational here in Tennessee. And all you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code 1025GAME. When you sign up, those who sign up right now will get a $50 free bet to use once the mobile sports betting site hits Tennessee. That code again, 1025GAME. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem or wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Hey, are you or your kid going to dress up as a Nashville Predators player or a Titans player or a Nashville SC player or a sports star for Halloween. Halloween coming up this weekend, Saturday. You can enter ESPN The Game's Nashville Sports Costume Contest. That's presented by Wilson County Hyundai. That's at thegamenashville.com for a chance to win a $100 gift card to Nashville Underground. All you have to do is submit a picture of you or your kid in the sports costume, and you will be entered for a chance to win. The contest will close on Monday. That's Monday, November 2nd. If you have not heard, Southern Miss now has their third head football coach this season because Scotty Walden has left right now. He's gone. And he's going to be introduced in Clarksville at Austin Peay as their new football coach. Tim Billings will take over as the school's third coach this season. Yikes.
AKA interim coach.
Yikes. I would like to see that business card. Let's talk about some things that are getting floated out there for the start of the next NHL season, which, as I said before, and I guess we answered it because in the past it's happened, I guess it'll technically be called the 2020-21 season, but it's not going to start in 2020. What are we hearing on possible start of the next hockey season?
Well, there's been a number of articles written. Right now, they are in a serious planning stage looking at different avenues. You know, if we can start this date, how do we do it? If we can have fans in the buildings by this date, when can we do it?
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen a couple articles now, one by Mike Russo from The Athletic, who covers the Wild, and Larry Brooks from the New York Post. They both had similar reports about something that is gaining traction, that now that they've canceled the Winter Classic, still not sure if you could start by January 1st. But as soon as you could start, the idea would be if you can't get fans in the building at that time, which is possible, especially in Canada where they've been very, very strict, right? Would you go to, say, four hub cities and have the four divisions play only each other for a certain amount of time until you could then have the regular schedule and have fans in the building? And the real interesting wrinkle to it is that all of the Canadian teams, to try to not work, that, you know, to eliminate the issue of trying to get people back and forth across the Canadian border, which right now there are big restrictions in doing, right? The Canadian teams would only play each other. And then the other three hubs would have the U.S.-based teams playing each other there. So a lot of ideas getting thrown out, but that seems to be the one that right now has the, quote, traction. Your thoughts?
Well, I'll go back to what I've said before when we've talked about this. Okay, you start the beginning of the 2021 calendar year. Are we still talking about 82 games? And if we are, I guess the days of starting back in October are done in the NHL, right? They're moving forward moving forward with later starts to the season, which we have said on the show, or at least I'll speak for me. I think that's a great idea. I personally think that they should not start in October. I wouldn't even start in November. I would start at the beginning of December and start your season then. But how are you going to cram in 82 games and another playoff run and expect to get back on schedule again? I say that is not going to happen. So what does that mean?
I think it's very possible that they do not play 82. In fact, Mike Russo's article has – now, remember this. There was a lockout in the 2012-2013 season. They didn't start until January of 13, and they only played 48 games. So you have the template. They've actually had to do that a couple of times. Way back in 1994-95, they played, I think, 48. But I think they want to play more than that. They want to play as close to 82 as possible. So the number 60 was thrown out by Russo. But I do think it's, at this point, going to be increasingly difficult to see if you can get 82 in there. Unless, as you said, Darren, you start messing with the following season and push everything back, which I don't think they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, because I wonder, and I know this is, it's all very different, but we've talked about television ratings and how the ratings have been down across the board for all sports. I mean, do the leagues look at this and say, all right, we need to try and get back on our normal schedules because that'll help that, or are they just factoring in that things are just weird in 2020? I don't know. But I agree. There's no way they can play 82 and then expect to start like normal in October. I mean, it's still weird to me that we're sitting here on October 27th. I mean, most likely in normal years, we'd be down at the arena right now getting ready for a game. Or they'd be on the road. But it's still weird to me. And I think that they eventually want to get back to that where they can have some normalcy. So I think you have to have a shortened season next year to get back going for 21-22.
One thing I'm curious about, Darren, is if you're at a point where there are some places around the league, and let's define some as, let's say, half, where you are allowed to have some number of fans in there, and then you have another cross-section, let's just say the Canadian cities, that can't go there yet, at what point do you say, you know, we've got to start playing the games? Because these, as I understand it, would not be bubbles, the hubs, right? You would be in a hub, but you would not be in a bubble. They don't want to ask the players to go full-on bubble like they did before. It would be somewhere in between where you're trying to minimize the risk of having tests. You're minimizing travel because you have this hub, but you're not asking the players to be separated from their families for a long time. But you don't want to do it any longer than you have to. So, and of course, as soon as you can get people in the building to watch games and it's safe to do so, they desperately are going to need the revenue. So at what point do they open it up and say, okay, this is what we're doing? I know a lot of the fans of Smashville would say, you know, I want to know when that date is. But of course, we don't know right now.
And how do you go about trying to answer those questions here in late October?
There's no way you can.
To plan
There's
for
no
something.
Way you can.
I know.
Do we think, I mean, when do we think, when does the announcement have to occur? I mean, I would think it's got to be
good,
in the next.
That is a good question. When do they have to finalize something?
So let's go on the premise that it's January 1st is when they're going to get going. I mean, you have to have an announcement by early November to open camps in early December.
I think January 1st is very overly optimistic. I just, most of the reports that are coming out would suggest that it's not going to be January 1st. Maybe training camp by January, but I think realistically it's going to take a little bit more time.
Well,
answer your question, it's a good question because you want to be able to announce something as early as you can, but you also, as they proved, I think, during the spring and summer, the longer you can wait before having to make the decision, the better off you are because you can accumulate more knowledge. The SEC, for example, right?
Yeah.
They waited as long as they could before they put the schedule out there, before they made the commitment. They just kind of said, we want to play, we want to play, but we got to take as much time as we possibly can take.
Yeah, I don't fault them for that, but at some point, like we talked about with other sports throughout, you know, quarantine, there has to be a drop dead date that somebody knows somewhere of we got to get that, it's got to happen here or it's going to completely cack things up.
Would December 1st sound like a general time where you'd like to be able to say something?
Oh, I think you got to have a plan in place before then.
Well, what's your plan for training camps? Is it an abbreviated training camp? Is it a normal training camp? If so, well, I don't think you could be December 1st with those announcements.
In Russo's article, they would like to be able to have the seven teams that did not play in the return to play have extra time because they haven't been on the ice since March, right? when they shut down, yeah, that was it for them. So they want to have more time for that. I think that they will be able to start doing stuff. I think that's what was written, that they want to have measures, even if it's not training camp, they want to be able to let those teams especially start gathering, at least having some small group workouts so guys can skate. Right now, though, there's a lot of players that are just home waiting for instructions, right? They went back home. So they're all over the globe.
Yeah.
So it is complicated. The NBA is very similar. And as we know, the two leagues talk amongst themselves a lot about what's the best way to go. So it's, and then there's, you know, what percentage of the salaries are being paid. It's, you know, based on how many games are there. So that's complicated too. And thank goodness, right? This is the great thing if you're a hockey fan, is that they have the CBA in place, right? Can you imagine if they were still trying to work that out on top of getting this season played? So again, the partnership being as strong as it is a huge plus, a huge plus.
To be continued. We'll see. There's got to be news on that front soon. I don't envy them of the task at hand right now in those rooms, trying to figure out, and probably on those rooms and in those Zooms, right, trying to figure out exactly how they're going to pull this off. But they'll have to make a decision, and I don't know how you do it, because they don't want to go back to the one thing that absolutely worked for sure, and I understand, was the bubble. We know that works. But they don't want to ask the players to do that again. I don't even know if the players would agree to do that again.
I don't know if they would.
So, but the problem is then you turn to, you know, then how are you going to then try to figure out how to make this work when you're not in that situation? Because here's another thing, as we've seen on the college football scene. Okay, Big Ten's back, Pac-12's getting ready to come back with no margin of error in their schedule. Well, we know how that's going to play out. Look at Wisconsin's quarterback. He's already tested positive. He's out 21 days. Wisconsin's going to be without their quarterback. How long is it before it's more guys? And then Wisconsin doesn't play a game. And then they don't play two games. You know, it's – so then how do you try to get to the schedule if you're not in the bubble situation? If we're talking about 82 games, 70 games, whatever the number is, how are you going to cram all this in knowing that teams are going to probably have setbacks possibly?
Yeah.
A lot of questions, right?
Big puzzle.
I don't envy them.
That'll do it for our show today. Good stuff as always. We'll try to be even better tomorrow on Hump Day. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Every boy and every girl.
Closing time. Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.